listening to the Swim Out Podcast, a show about the wonderful world of outdoor swimming.
Hello, Mikey.
Hello, Vicky.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of the Swim Out Podcast, where we'll be talking all about relay swims.
Coming up today, I chat to Dirk Gavert about how he got into long-distance relays and ask him why he loves them so much.
I think, to me, relays are, in some ways, the embodiment of what the whole channel or long-distance swimming club or family does. It's people coming together and sharing a love for a sport and having a good time together.
And Mikey visits his good friend Catherine and asks her why she's done so many relays and what she gets out of them.
Every relay I've swum on has been totally different people, and each one I've developed special bonds with, and it just feels like something deep and full life.
We also chat to Team Bits Missing about their North Channel Relay Challenge.
As an amputee, I'm used to getting thrown around a little bit, but if you've got the mindset that you want to go for a swim, you'll get in and you'll get out. It doesn't matter whether you've got two legs, one leg, two arms, whatever.
And we hear from you, our lovely listeners, about your experiences of swimming relays.
Quick reminder, listeners, please do give us some likes and feedback on your podcast provider app. Good ratings give the podcast a higher profile so more people get to listen. Oh, and do share with all your friends.
So you and me, Mikey, we did a very short fun relay swim at Fish, the Parliament Hill ice swimming hootenanny in January. What was our team called?
We were called the Synchro Bells.
It was a lot of fun, wasn't it? We had to do synchronized swimming actions in the middle of the lane.
Yeah, we went down, we dressed up, we all had a, we had a headband on with sequins, and then halfway down our individual swim, we went down and we had to do a little something or other that was supposed to be synchro.
Some synchro was more synchro than other bits.
Yeah, Steph was very good, wasn't she?
Steph was great. But today we're talking about much, much longer relays, aren't we? I've done one relay across the channel, and I was in a team called Bridget's Boys because I was a late addition to the team, and initially it was Bridget and five boys, and then I came along, but the team remained Bridget's Boys. Mikey, tell me about your favourite swim.
I really enjoyed my first ever relay across the channel. I was asked to join a team 2 days before they went, as somebody had dropped out. And it was Jason and Anna and I, and we each did an hour each. And it was just wonderful to see the start and the finish. And I got to land the relay.
So what do you mean by landing?
So I got to walk out of the water onto the beach. It was a nice crowded beach on a summer's day. And my teammates came out just behind me after I'd cleared the water. And we all got a round of applause from the locals. It was fantastic.
Oh, lovely. Sounds great. To help us understand how the relay swim really works, we've invited someone who's observed and ratified many relay swims. Deborah Vine is herself a long-distance swimmer and an ice swimmer of note, having won the 200-metre freestyle race in her age group at the International Ice Swimming Competition in Slovenia in 2020. Plus, she's completed three English Channel relays and three round Jersey relays. Welcome to Swim Out, Deborah.
Hi.
You're an observer of channel swims. Can you tell us a bit about what this role entails?
So as an observer, your principal role is to observe the swim for ensuring that the rules are complied with of the governing body, and to have sole charge of the timing of the swim. And that is the key jobs. And I've now observed a lot. I've observed a lot of swims, both solos and relays, well over 50, 60 swims now.
Wow. So I've got some questions here from my teammate Emma, who's from Out to Swim, and they're doing a club relay swim this summer across the English Channel. And she's got some questions for all of us. She was going to be here, but sadly, work has made it impossible for her to be here in person. So the Out to Swim team is with Simon Ellis on the Channel CS&PF, so that's Channel Swimming and Piloting Federation, and the Correct. Name of their boat is High Hopes. So their first question is, do you need passports for when you cross the border?
You must take your passport on the boat with you, and the observer usually or the pilot will come and check you have it, and in some boats they will collect the passport while the swim is going on.
So the second question is, do you have any tips for seasickness or how can you train to get used to the motion?
It's very difficult to train for the motion for actually seasickness, and it's probably the one thing that I feel quite strongly is the most important thing for relays. The primary reason relays do not make it across to France is because of seasickness. And it's something every swimmer in a relay should take very seriously. The first swim I did, I was part of a Diabetes UK team. There were 10 teams going out that year. And the first four teams went out, two of them turned back. And that was like a bolt going through the rest of us. And it was seasickness. And straight away, I was down the high street and said, right, I've got a test. And actually, I tested at home. The most common one, Studeron, I took. And this is personal to me, and it's personal to everybody, the medications and what works for them and what doesn't. Studeron I took at home. I got the most crashing headache within half an hour and thought, that's not going to work. I then tried another one called Quells, and I was doing the ironing. I took some Quells. I was doing the ironing, watching TV. And the next thing I knew, it was 3 hours later. The iron was on the board, still on, and I'd crashed out completely. So I thought, that's not going to work. And eventually I tried the Scopoderm or Scopoderm patches, and I've worn those for every crossing of the channel since then. I daren't not take it, and I'm now down to using about an eighth of a patch when I go out, because you can chop them down like a cake and just take a little bit, but even a little bit, I'm not going to risk it.
The next question from the OutSwim team is, how do you decide the optimum order to swim in the relay?
Every team can choose whatever order they want. The majority will choose for the fastest swimmers to go first. So most would put your fastest swimmer in first, because you want to get out of the tides and as far across to that English shipping lane, which is the second zone that you're aiming for, as far and as fast as you can.
And the next question, when do you get told your tidal day within the window, and how many hours notice do you get?
Each team will have a captain or a person that is speaking to the pilot, and the pilot will get in touch with you the tide before your tide starts, and your team should be available from midnight on the first day of your tide. From that moment on, you are on call. In fact, before that, because you could be going out at midnight on day one. Mostly, your pilot will be looking at the weather for the next week ahead, and they will come and they'll probably say things like, I'm looking at next Wednesday, Thursday, maybe even 5-6 days in advance as potentially getting out. But anything can happen I've turned up to observe relays and we've decided there and then that it's not swimmable. Mostly you'll get at least 12 hours notice and be on call really for up to a week.
I remember with my first solo, I actually booked a caravan, stayed down there all week waiting for the call, and I never got the call because the weather changed. So I actually decided the second time I set off, the second time I was going for my solo, I decided to actually to stay in London because it's home and it's more comfortable and I got better rest. Here's a nice question. Did you get a thank? Do you need to get a thank you gift for your pilot or your observer? Is it expected?
It's not expected. And completely up to you. It's your choice.
Next question from the Out to Swim relay team. Relay takeovers. Are they quite straightforward or can you get disqualified if you don't do it correctly?
They are straightforward, and yes, you can get disqualified if you don't do it correctly. The rule is that the swimmer going into the water must pass the swimmer from behind so that the swim is continuous the whole way.
So how can you get it wrong?
By the swimmer in front stopping swimming and getting drifting back with the tide, and the next swimmer gets in and just starts swimming. And so it's a case of making sure that the swimmer who has been swimming for an hour or 2 hours just is aware that the next swimmer's coming and sticks at about halfway down the boat, so that the next swimmer getting in, if they're getting in at the back of the boat or at the side of the boat, comes in behind them and then swims past, and would normally do it on the outside. That's the safest way to do it. But it's something that is worth practicing. And in my experience, most of observing, the relays get better and better at it as they go across the channel. They, by the end of the swim, they've normally got it nailed.
When I did my relay, I don't remember that being difficult. I mean, I remember being quite anxious about it beforehand. But then once you've sort of seen it happen a couple of times, it becomes quite clear.
Be aware of the rules. Be aware that when you start and you finish your relay, you need to start beyond the waterline, so on dry land. That's at the end as well. You know, the excitement can take over and you don't actually go right up onto the beach or kind of spread yourself across rocks or whatever.
The team also wonder if we've got any food recommendations. What's best to bring with you on the boat? I mean, my go-to food actually is hot cross buns. They're just kind of tasty and filling. I don't know what's your go-to food, Deborah?
Most people is carbs of some description on boats, and I think that helps with seasickness as well. Having food in your tummy definitely helps with seasickness. I love crisps and cheddar biscuits. Ginger biscuits are good because ginger is good for seasickness as well. I would say keep it simple. Fancy food, most people don't want fancy food. They want simple, plain stuff.
What do people do between swims? Play games, music, books?
Depending on the size of the team, obviously the number in the team, you would get out. First thing is to strip off, dry, get dry clothes on or your next costume on and get warm. Get a warm drink inside you, get warm. At the same time, that's one swimmer getting out. There'll be a swimmer who then is watching the swimmer in the water. Always have a swimmer in the swimmer being watched. There's nothing worse than being in that water and feeling very alone and everyone else is having a party on the boat and not watching you. And then the next swimmer may be resting and another swimmer may be getting ready to go in next to swim. So it's splitting it up into those 1 hour slots of, you know, get out, get dressed, get warm, rest, watch a swimmer, get ready to swim.
Also, I think these days there's quite a big job to be done quite often with social media, you know, telling other people what's happening, and you can build quite a bit of excitement if you are live broadcasting from the swim, and people get really excited. And I think that can be an important role as well. Common chafing areas and recommendations for lubricants.
Okay.
I'm a Vaseline girl myself.
I think most people, certainly in the UK, use Vaseline. A lot of the Americans come over, they use something called Desitin, which is, I think, called butt cream. It's baby cream, pseudocreme type stuff, white, and it's a zinc oxide based. Also gives them sun protection. The four relays, I'm not sure that a lot of people need or wear chafing lubricant.
The team are asking, was there anything you wished you'd brought with you and anything you brought but didn't need? Yeah, I didn't have quite enough warm clothing on my relay on the way back, so I wished I'd had more layers of warm clothing. I hadn't sort of factored in that it would be cold on the way back. I always take too much food, but then I don't think I'll ever change on that.
The other thing which I think is an absolute essential and is absolutely not essential really, but is fairy lights. Oh my goodness. To be swimming in the black of night and to have fairy lights twinkling on the boat, I can tell you, is a joy, a real joy.
Such a nice idea. I've never had fairy lights.
Oh, you have to have fairy lights.
I think Mikey might have had fairy lights, actually.
I'm sure he had fairy lights.
I did, ladies. I had fairy lights on my solo crossing, but not on any of the relays I've done. I have looked after many soloists during their crossings, and I always take glow sticks and anything that helps them see the boat clearly. When I swam my solo, all I could see in the middle of the night was a boat light. I called it the blue light of safety and tried to stay in the light as much as possible so my crew could see me at all times.
I'm having fairy light envy now. A longer version of the interview with Deborah is available on the website, where we answer more questions from the Out to Swim team and discuss everything in more detail. So please do make your way to swimout.net.
I travelled to Cambridge to catch up with a dear friend, Dirk. We trained together for our Channel Solos in 2019 down in Dover, travelled to Croatia for an endurance swim camp, and also shared a love of warm chicken on the beach after our long training swims in the cold channel. I started by asking him how many relays he'd actually done.
Well, hello, Mikey. Great to see you. I have done 9 channel relays, and that includes a two-way, which I did in 2019. And I've also done Lake Geneva, three-person relay of Lake Geneva, and a relay of Loch Ness.
And why have you done so many relays?
Well, I guess I have to say that I enjoy them. I think relays are just a wonderful way of doing some activity with friends, a sense of achievement. I think to me, relays are in some ways the embodiment of what the whole channel or long distance swimming club or family does. It's people coming together and sharing a love for a sport and having a good time together.
What's your first relay, and you know, how did you get into doing one?
I got swimming quite late. I think it was in my mid-50s. I was in a bad place. I didn't enjoy my work. I was bored, very routine work. I was eating too much, drinking too much, and somebody said, you need to go to the gym. And so I went to a gym and got a personal trainer, who had one look at me on the bike and said, you should go swimming. The bike's not for you. So he took me swimming and he coached me for a little while. It turns out that he was an ex-Olympic swimmer, a really, really fantastic swimmer. And he coached me for a while and made me relax in the water. I'd always swum all my life, but never really with any intent or any goal in mind. And so swimming just became a form of relaxation for me. Going to the pool was just it was me time. And I started swimming longer and longer distances in the pool. And then one day I thought, this is boring. I need to go out. So I did Bournemouth Pier to Pier. That was my first outdoor swim. And I thought it was absolutely amazing that I could swim 2 kilometres. I was amazed that I could swim that far. And then I did it again. And then I did the Dart 10K. Again, I thought, that's amazing, I did 10K. Then I decided, okay, next must be the Channel. I'll go to the Channel. I'll book a solo for later this year. Thankfully, my wife intervened and said, you should do a relay first. For once, I listened to her and I contacted the charity Aspire and got on one of their relays. And that was in 2015 was my first relay. Aspire Crocodiles, we crossed in about 14 hours, landed at midnight, and I was hooked. I just thought it was wonderful.
How many people are in an Aspire relay?
Six.
Six people. And are they all similar ability, speed and age?
No. So what Aspire do is that they attract enough swimmers of all abilities and ages to fill about 6 to 10 boats a year. And they shuffle the teams around so that everyone's got the equal chance of arriving. So they put some fast swimmers, some slow swimmers. And so their success rate in getting teams across is very, very high because of that.
Were you a fast or a slow swimmer?
I was somewhere in the middle.
So you said you did some lake swimming and you did a relay in Geneva and Loch Ness?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So my first relay was in 2015, and as I said, I was hooked and I came back for another relay, again with Aspire the year after in 2016. So in my second relay, I met two other swimmers, Peter Whitehead and Nicola Naunton. And Peter and I were both spent some of our youth in Switzerland, close to each other. We didn't know each other at the time, of course. We only met in the Channel relay. And so we decided that we would go and do Lake Geneva, and Nicola joined us for that. So we did a 3-person, one-way relay of Lake Geneva. And Lake Geneva is the longest lake in Europe, so it is almost exactly 2 channels. And it was wonderful. It was wonderful. The boat crew played a little trick on me because I landed, and they told me exactly where to land. And there are no tides, you know exactly where you're going to land. And they pointed to somewhere on the beach. It was a big public beach. It was a very hot day. And they sent me to the nudist beach. And so I stepped out of the water with all these naked bodies looking at me.
That's brilliant. So, you know, when you're doing the 3-person relay, do you each do an hour? Do you each do 2 hours? How does it work?
We did 2 hours.
2 hours. 2 hours.
And we did the same thing for the 2-way channel relay. The Lake Geneva relay, we called ourselves the Lion, the Witch and the Dry Robe. And Nicola couldn't do the two-way channel with us. So we were called the Lion, another Witch and the same old Dry Robe.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Dirk, have you got any relays lined up for this year or the year after or anything booked?
No. Nothing booked in the channel, but I'm always ready. I join the CSPF and I do my medical and the qualifying swim. So at the drop of a hat, I'm ready to go. But I am swimming Manhattan. I just found out a few weeks ago that I got a place and I'll be swimming it on the same day as Vicky from SwimApp. So it'll be fantastic.
And when is that?
It's middle of October. It's quite late in the year, but the water will still be a very good temperature, 16, 17.
Well, I'm sure we'll hear from you both about that later on.
So I hope so.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's very exciting that we're swimming around Manhattan on the same day.
Is that the same race they call the 20 Bridges, Vicky?
Yes, it's a fabulous race all around Manhattan Island. And actually, that race features later in the programme too. Mikey, do you have any funny stories from your relay swims?
Well, when I swam with Margot and the team for her 50th Channelversary relay, I was lucky enough to be in the rib that escorted our final swimmer to shore. Sadly, I couldn't swim in with her as our fabulous friends Frederick and Steve were on the shore waiting. When we got there, she got cuddles and champagne and I waited for her to swim back. Well, getting into a rib from water isn't always so easy, and she needed myself and Sean, the co-pilot, to help her in. As she was hoisted up, all her top half of her swimming costume came down, but within a second, I whipped everything back in and covered her up. Sean didn't see a thing, and she was very grateful.
That's hilarious. On one swim track holiday, one of the guides used to shout at me that my white pointers were poking out. It's all part of long distance swimming. Here are some more decent relay stories from our lovely listeners.
Hello, I'm Keys Rothwell, and I live near Llanberis in North Wales. In 2003, I was a member of a five-person relay team to cross the English Channel. In October 2021, at the age of 72, I became part of another five-person team. We arrived at Dover and waited for our weather window and were told that, unlike my previous crossing, some of the swim would be in the dark. All my training had been local, in the Snowdonia Lakes and nearby Anglesey beaches in daylight. We had a couple of days to wait, so it seemed appropriate to do some night swims. We got into the water and started swimming, and even though we were wearing flashing safety lights on our heads, I was having difficulty maintaining sight of my fellow swimmers. In fact, I was having difficulty seeing anything at all, including the lights at the harbour. Then it dawned on me, and let this be a lesson for all night swimmers. The lenses of my trusted swimming goggles were heavily tinted and I was virtually blind. Thank goodness I discovered this on my training swim. It could have been catastrophic, as we were later given a start time of midnight. Luckily, one of my team had a set of spare clear goggles, which I was able to borrow. It was a lesson learned. An experience which I will never forget was in 2006. I took part in and we won the 28.5-mile two-man relay team around Manhattan Island. It's an iconic swim in two-hour stints under some of the best-known bridges in the world and past some of the most recognisable New York backdrops. Along the East River and the Harlem River, then back into the Hudson with the tide moving at a rate which flatters your swimming speed. As we were a team from Wales, there was a Welsh Tourist Board office in New York, and after around 8 hours, at the end of the tough swim, we were greeted on the dockside by the frantic Welsh flag waving and cheering staff who had come out to greet us. It was an appreciated and very emotional ending to our long day, and a memory which will stay with us forever.
My name is Alistair and I am part of Out to Swim, firstly in London but now in Bristol. I've done the Open Water Triple Crown as relays starting back in 2009 when I did the English Channel with a team and then did the Manhattan Island relay followed by the Catalina, and all of them stick in my memory for brilliant reasons, apart from just swimming with brilliant people. But I got to swim the sunrise lap in the English Channel, and it is still burned into my memory, just kind of looking back on that when you're swimming. And then in the Catalina, when everyone on the boat shouted at me when I was swimming at one point because there was dolphins swimming with me and I hadn't seen them, and then they swam with me for a few minutes and it was gorgeous.
We saw dolphins playing in the bow wave of a massive tanker on my friend and swim out co-presenter Hunter's swim. It was beautiful. Mikey, did you ever get dolphins?
I was crewing for Claire Russell to swim round Jersey, and she was starting to feel a little dip. She was still swimming strong, but it was one of those times we all get during a long swim. Anyway, I was just about to go in and swim with her, as I was her support swimmer and crew, when a pod of about 12 dolphins came and were swimming underneath and around her. It was truly magical. She mentioned after that she could hear them communicating under the water, and she said they must have known she needed a boost. I may not have been able to swim with them, Vicky, but I did manage to record it on Claire's phone, which was a great memento of her swim. As I did a relay with my lovely friend Catherine, I decided to go and chat with her about all the different relays she's done and those she has coming up. I started by asking her, what was her first relay?
So, Mikey, the first relay I did was done because I'd always dreamt about swimming the channel, and I saw an advert in Outdoor Swimmer magazine advertising to do it with Diabetes UK, and that was my opportunity to fulfill a dream of swimming the channel with a team. And in doing that, I think I can rate that first relay as one of the best days of my life, because to swim across to France, the biggest adventure I'd been on, with a group of people that I hardly knew, but then by the end of that got to really know well and felt this lifelong bond with them, it was just magical. And the very next year I offered to join the team again.
We did a relay together.
We did indeed.
And that made us become closer.
It
and
did.
Become more of a bond between our friendship.
Definitely.
Do you feel like you've done that with other relays? Has that happened?
Every relay I've swum on has been totally different people, and each one I've developed special bonds with. In some cases, very close friendships. In other cases, we don't get the chance to see each other much, but we keep in touch and have this special memory that we've shared together. And it just feels like something deep and for life.
And what's it like on the boat during a relay?
On the boat, which is what makes it fun doing something in a team, it's not always easy. Swimming the channel isn't easy. Being on a boat and usually taking off at midnight, in the middle of the night, sometimes the sea can be rough. And just having teammates who encourage you and make you feel that you're not alone, helping each other, cheering each other on, dressing each other, giving each other cups of tea, as I recall you doing for me, Mikey, fitting us into our costumes when we fall out of our cozies. It's a lot of fun. It's a nervous time and it's a tough time, but the support you get from teammates is magical.
So, Catherine, tell me about the different relays that you've done.
The first relay I did in 2014 was a team of 6 women from around the world, mainly around the UK, but one South African and one American swimmer. We just got on so well and felt so special as a group that the very next year we booked to swim around Jersey together as a reunion relay. So we've done 2 together, still very much a bonded group of people. Following year, I did it with a group of complete strangers. They needed a space filling on a team. By the end of it, we certainly weren't strangers. We were good friends. One of the people was a friend from the relay before, actually, so I won't say we were all complete strangers, but we were people who didn't know each other well until we did the relay. Another very special relay I did was with a team of Indian men who had a last minute need to fill a place because one of their members was injured. So it was me and 3 gentlemen from India who were just wonderful, a wonderful team, and still in touch and looking forward to going to swim with them in India in the near future. And of course I did my relay with Mikey, which was part of Margot's relay. Margot was somebody who wanted to celebrate the 50th anniversary of her channel crossing solo and put together a relay. I was a reserve and had the great fortune of being able to swim
and land the relay, if I remember.
And land the relay, much to Mikey's horror. That was just wonderful. And Mikey and I had known each other before, had a good few chats on the beach, but of course, having swum across to France together through the middle of the night made us friends for life. Good friends, I hope.
Yes, it did. Yes, it really did. And tell me about the relays that are coming up. You say you've got 2 or 3 coming up.
I have 2 channel relays coming up. One was meant to be last year, but we got blown out with bad weather, sadly. And that is a relay with 3 sets of sisters. So it's my sister and I, Claire and her sister, Nicola, and Hayley and Helen. That is one that is going to be lots of fun, I'm sure. And then this year I have a relay with my dear friend Deborah Vine, who has crewed for me on my solo swims and been on several relays with me before. And it's with a bunch of people on her swimming club who I've got to know and really like. So that will be a great one too.
Any of the relays stand out at all for any reason or a memorable moment or anything?
Every single relay has plenty of things that stand out and special memories, and on different days I might think about different relays and different teams that I've been on. One that is very special to me is a family relay I did with my brother and my sister. We called it Sibling Revelry. And that was just a very tough swim through the night, very rough conditions. But having achieved a swim from England to France with my brother and my sister was a very, very special thing to do, which I won't forget.
Thanks, Catherine. I know that many relay swimmers stay in touch. Next, we have Team Bits Missing, which was the first disabled relay to cross one of the most challenging seas, the North Channel, from Donaghadee in Northern Ireland to Port Patrick in Scotland in June 2022. It was a five-person relay, and we have two of the swimmers here today on a rather poor connection, sadly. We have Jonty Warnican, who we met in the last episode as he's also a fan of ice swimming, and Kate Sunley from Stockton-on-Tees. Welcome to Swim Out Podcast, both. Was this your first crossing as a relay?
I've relayed before, but this was first as Team Bits Missing.
So how did you get the idea for this relay, and how did you find each other?
It's a bit of a roundabout conversation. So David lives in Northern Ireland and coaches and observes on the North Channel and has done two other relays across the North Channel with able-bodied teams, apart from him, his good self. He had wanted to put this together, and he put in touch with me through the ice swimming, and Kate knew him through Hit the Wall. But this was all supposed to happen before lockdown, and obviously with lockdown it delayed everything. So we kept chatting. We only actually finally all met as a team when we went to Northern Ireland.
So you didn't practice together, or?
I met up with both Andrew and Mary, and we did. Mary had done her qualifying swim, but Andrew and I still needed to do ours. And we met up at Cap and Ray Dive Centre over in Lancashire. Andrew and I did our qualifying swim, and Mary joined us for the swim as well. So that was the first time us three had met each other. It turned out that we got on reasonably well as a team, thank goodness. Otherwise, sitting on the boat could have been a bit of an issue.
Tell us about the big day. How was it?
Our observer and the pilot and our hired help, Milo, I'm not quite sure what they were expecting, but they got five amputees with warped and twisted senses of humour.
I think the biggest concern from their side of things was how are they going to get us out. I mean, getting us into the water is easy. You just chuck us over the side if you need to. It's actually how you extract us through the water, because some of us are, I'm pretty able at getting up ladders and ropes. I'm the only below-knee amputee. The rest of them are all above knees. We're all left-leg amputees, which none of us actually realised until we met up.
It seems quite extraordinary that you're all left-leg amputees.
Yeah. Group of swimmers together who happen to be amputees, and then all find out we're left-leg amputees. That is quite a turn-up for the book.
One of the things about being an amputee and doing the sport that we do is you're fairly robust and you're fairly used to just getting on with things and getting yourself in and out, whether it hurts a bit, cuts a bit, you know, scrapes a bit. Well, it's just the life we do, you know, as amputees. So we've all got our own way, but the guys were brilliant, you know. We got everyone up and out of the sea. That was probably the biggest concern. And basically, we did it in order of sort of channel experience. So David went first, then me, then Kate. We just got on with our own thing, because you know it's just a cycle that just keeps going. You just know what you need to do when you come out and start your recovery, and then what you need to do before you get in, and you just start that process. But most of us have our systems and protocols and processes all sorted out, because we do, you know, we swim a lot, so, and we're all pretty upfront type of people, I would suggest. So to me, it was just another day in the, you know, another day swimming. It sounds awful, but it's just what we do.
It was definitely the norm for me. Having not done a relay before, I was a little bit unsure about how it worked, but say they were fantastic at getting us into the water at the right time and not touching the boat on the other side when we were waiting to come out of the water. And then getting us out of the water using the ladder and a little bit of brute strength, which we're used to. When you do something like open water swimming, as an amputee, I'm used to getting thrown around a little bit. But if you've got the mindset that you want to go for a swim, you'll get in and you'll get out. It doesn't matter whether you've got two legs, one leg, two arms, whatever. You go for it, and that mindset was apparent in all of us on the team.
The North Channel's absolutely notorious for its cold, and the thing that would really put me off actually is the jellyfish. So how was all of that?
Yeah, I think it was 11 and a half degrees when I got in for my first stint, which was fresh. The thing with the North Channel is if you go cold, you're less likely to get jellyfish. If you wait until it warms up in the summer, you're more likely to get jellyfish. So it's trying to pick that time that suits you. But I mean, we saw jellyfish. David stuck his hand in one. I missed one by literally 3 inches. It came straight past my face.
I saw a swarm quite, well, they were very deep. And I was swimming over them saying, just stay down there. Don't come up.
Why did you choose the North Channel? I mean, it is one of the most difficult swims in the world.
Because David and I had done the English, and no disabled team had been across the North, and David wanted, you know, he said that needed to be sorted out. And so that's how this started, really. It was this, he'd done it twice before we went. And he said, this is just ridiculous. We need to have a disabled team. But all disabled relay teams is quite uncommon. And there's there's no reason why it needs to be uncommon, because there's no reason why you can't really do this. This is literally just three, four one-hour swims in water that is a bit nippy, that this community, this open water community, is so accepting. And they just want people to succeed. And so people just go, yeah, I can do that. We'll do it that way. You know, as a 30-year amputee, and I think Kate's longer than me, this is our day-to-day, so we just don't see it as an issue. You know, it's just, we're just swimmers. Yeah. It's simple as that.
That is it, really. We are swimmers. But I think the other side of trying to get amputee teams together or disabled teams together is knowing the other disabled swimmers. And I think slowly but surely the word is spreading to other disabled swimmers that, yeah, you can get a team together and you can do things that you want to achieve as a disabled team. The community of open water swimming is fantastic. It's a lovely community to be part of.
Again, apologies for the poor line. There is a longer version with heaps more details about the team who are going to swim the Bristol Channel this summer, so keep an eye open for news on that. They also suggest visiting a Facebook page called Adaptive and Disabled Open Water Swimmers, ADOWS, to connect to other disabled swimmers. And they even offer that you can get in touch with them via this podcast.
Coming up next time is an interview with Chloe McArdle, the Queen of the Channel. I spent the day in Weymouth with her, talking about her swims, her plans for the future, and we even had a little dip in the sea. That's it for today. Thanks for sharing all those lovely relay stories, Mikey.
You're welcome. It's great to hear how much joy swimmers get from them. Bye for now, everyone.
Bye. Swim out and swim safe.